You know, I was just listening to a clip from Seinfeld. Elaine was not happy with her job or something, and it played her thoughts, right? And one of her thoughts was, is it too late to go to law school? And I was just like, why?
Hello and welcome to episode 439 of the Thinking LSAT podcast. I'm Nathan Fox, and with me is Ben Olson. We're the co-founders of LSATdemon.com and the LSAT Demon Daily podcast. You can be LSAT famous. Just share news and ask questions on our website, thinkinglsat.com. You can also email a voice recording of your question to help@thinkinglsat.com. Just keep it under 30 seconds and record from a quiet place. We'd love to hear your voice on the show. Coming up, we have a free class from Ben. Go to lsat.link/free and you'll always see our upcoming free class. He's teaching a class called What Are Logic Games? That's happening on Monday, February 19th, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. It's an hour and a half class, all levels. What are logic games? Cool. What's that class going to be about?
Going to be about games.
We're reading comprehension? Games.
Yeah, we're going to do one or two games. The agenda hasn't even been put together yet, but that's the way I always do my class. We do a game. I give everyone time to do it. They do it. And then I start doing it myself on the board so they can see how I would have approached it. Sometimes I look at the other diagrams that we've created in the past and try to do something different. Cool. Just so people can see that you don't have to do it one particular way.
Are you getting nostalgic yet when you're doing the games? Are you like wistfully, like a tear going down and you're realizing that it's the last time you might ever get to teach that particular logic game?
No, you know, I don't really feel that emotion, but it is a bummer. Yeah. They're so like, you know, they're fun and you have to work to get good at them. It seems like a good proxy for the LSAT. It's a bummer that they got sued and had to get rid of them.
Cool. So again, lsat.link/free if you want to sign up for Ben's free class on February 19th. All right, we've got an email here at the top of the show from Josh. Why don't you go ahead, Ben?
Sure. Hi, Ben and Nathan. I'm not sure if law school is right for me. I got a lot out of listening to your interview with Janaea Gordon on episode 437 because I related to her motivations for entering the legal field and find her current role slash career path extremely enticing. I found it interesting when Janaea explained that she and her coworkers in the tech slash privacy space mostly have JDs and find them helpful even though they aren't practicing law in the traditional sense. How would you square this knowledge with your typical advice that one should not go to law school unless they're dead set on being a practicing attorney?
I would just say that just because those people ended up happy in that narrow niche. I mean, did you notice how much of a badass Janaea Gordon is?
Yeah.
Did you notice that Janaea Gordon has kicked ass in absolutely everything she has ever done? I bet that her coworkers in the tech slash privacy space who happen to have JDs, I bet that they are also just complete badasses who have kicked ass every step of the way. And they're calling their own shots, doing something. They're choosing not to practice law.
Yeah. I mean, for any job, we're not an expert, right? So you just have to say, hey, this is the job I want. Okay, go talk to people who have that job or who have hired for that job and say, do I need a JD or not?
And it's a very different question. If you say, do I need a JD? If they understand your question, if this was an LSAT question and it was like logically, you know, what does those words actually mean? When you say, do you need a JD? That means, do I strictly have to have it in order to get this job? And if they're answering that question, honestly, they have to say no, because Janaea said that it was, I think she said something like half or something.
Yeah.
So just because they ended up there, I mean, I think they ended up there by accident with their JD. I don't think that was their intention. I think if you had an intentional path toward their career, it might not necessarily include a JD. But again, you'd have to talk more to those individual people who happen to have them, right? It's sort of like a correlation causation type of a thing. Like, yeah, there happen to be a lot of lawyers here. I mean, you know where else there's a lot of people with JDs? As like receptionists at law firms. Because if you get a JD from a really shitty school and you can't pass the bar, or you get a JD from a really shitty school and you can't get a job as a practicing lawyer, sometimes you end up practicing as like a paralegal or some other legal assistant or legal secretary or receptionist at the law firm trying to get your foot in the door.
Yeah. Or some administrator position at a law school or something like that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Those are people who, you know, I don't think that was their dream job. They just kind of happened to end up there in the career office or admissions or wherever in the law school. But, you know, and then the thing is, if you ask them, oh, well, is your JD an advantage? They're always going to say yes, because how can the answer to that question sensibly be no?
Sure.
People argue with me all the time because I say, I didn't learn anything in law school. I learned not to like talk to lawyers if you can avoid it. I mean, I learned also not to talk to the cops, but only talk to lawyers if you are confronted by the cops is like not a bad rule, kind of.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, like what, just because of the expenses is what I mean. But I often say, no, I'm an LSAT teacher. I was an LSAT teacher before I started law school. I don't think that going to law school actually helped me in any way in my career or my business. I don't use my business law knowledge or whatever, you know, that's just, but then people force me to say, well, but surely at least it makes you more authoritative when you advise your students. And I'm like, I guess you're trying to get me on a technicality that my JD actually does something for me.
Yeah. I mean, when you talk about your JD for what you do now, it does close to zero, right? But maybe for Janaea's job, it's 50% helpful or something. I don't know. Right. There are going to be different degrees of helpfulness that JD applies, but you really have to make sure it's worth it.
Yes. Yeah. And so that's why I don't think our advice is going to change based on that interview with Janaea. I think you should have it's like, is your JD necessary? Simple as that. If you have to have it, then great. But if you just like think it might give you a boost, man, that's a crazy investment to be making of time and money. If you just think, oh, well, you know, it'll be good for whatever I decide to do.
Sure. Especially, I mean, this correspondent, Josh, right, said, this path seems extremely enticing to me. Well, you may also end up there and be like, oh, this is not actually what I want to do.
Mm. And think about how long and how expensive it was to get you to that point where you realize, oh, shit, it's not what I thought.
Yeah.
Like we talk about failing fast a lot, too, right? Like you should try things out, but be quick to fail on them. Be quick to give up on a, you know, investment you wanted to make or a business that you wanted to start or a genius invention that you think you created. Like when you really 100% believe in it, then yeah, you have to do it and you have to overcome some obstacles. But when it's just sort of in the brainstorming phase, which a lot of these people seem to be, you should try to figure out a way to fail fast. And law school, unfortunately, doesn't give you that opportunity.
Yeah.
It's like, oh no. Well, you won't really, I mean, boy, you can't even take the bar exam until after you've done 3 years of education. So then you're in this artificial world of law school for 3 years.
And the sad part is if you hate it, you can't use that as a proxy to decide that you don't like this type of career. Because in the back of your head, you're like, well, I'm not going to become an attorney. I'm actually going to go do X.
And oh, it's yeah, like, totally. Right. That's why I have so much more faith in the people who, believe it or not, I have so much more faith in the people who say, I want to do big law. Because if you say you want to do big law, then that means, okay, you're going to go to the best school you can get into at a good price, and you're going to then get straight A's while you're there. You're going to plan on kicking ass so that you can go kick ass as a lawyer. And then it's like, if you're not doing well in your 1L year, you've got an opportunity to tap out. Or if you get that job between your 2L and 3L year and you hate it, like you realize inside the law firm, finally, you're like, oh my God, this is awful. You could drop out before your 3L year. It's real hard.
Or pivot to some other kind of law, but yeah.
Yeah. The people who, because that's what my story was like, well, I'm not sure what I want to do with it. And that was such a disaster. It was such a silly thing for me to try to go to law school. It made no sense. Yeah. I just didn't have an outcome I didn't even have any kind of, oh, yeah, I might, you know, want to be a law professor. And we hear that from students.
That's wild. You know, I was just listening to a clip from Seinfeld, like short clips, funny clips, right? And Elaine was, I can't remember what was going on, but she was not happy with her job or something. And it played her thoughts, right? And one of her thoughts was, is it too late to go to law school? And I was just like, why? I mean, it's a joke, right? It's funny, but it's like, why is this a default fallback? Oh,
doctors and lawyers, man. It's just like been on television since the 50s. And it's this impression that, no, I mean, doctors, lawyers, those are professional jobs. Accountant, maybe.
Secure and safe or something, right? Like, they believe that if you go to law school, your path is now laid for you, but it's not. That's the sad part. It's like the opposite. Your path is not laid for you, and you just spent a shit ton of time and money. High risk endeavor.
Very high risk and... yeah, very expensive, very time consuming, and I'm not changing my mind. I think you got to really know what you're getting yourself into, and if you don't want to practice law, then I just don't know why you're getting a professional certification to practice law.
Yeah.
If you don't want to be admitted to the bar, why are you taking the necessary educational requirements to be admitted to the bar? Seems pretty clear. Should we finish Josh's email? Go ahead.
Sure. He says, I currently work as a consultant / public opinion pollster in DC and make about $100,000 before taxes. My main motivations for going to law school are one, increasing my earning potential.
If you work in big law.
Yeah. Two, paving the way for really high level engaging work on the cutting edge like Janaea gets to engage with. Okay. That's that mythical, like, oh, this is going to lead somewhere amazing. And
well,
three,
like, are you going to become a law professor like Janaea?
Yeah.
I mean, like, are you, I don't know, boy, you just have to kill it so hard to follow her path.
Three, positioning myself as a credible option for executive level positions down the road if those opportunities come along in the corporate world. Again, sort of vague. Here, I mean,
do it.
If you don't like night school. If you Absolutely. Don't like what we're saying, this is why you go for free. You dramatically reduce the risk. You do have to invest your time. And like you said, if you can do night school and go for nearly free, then you're maintaining your current job and it's so much easier just to walk away.
Keep your job. Everybody's going to assume you're much more of a badass if you just continue earning $100,000 a year or plus. You'll presumably get raises and normal raises, cost of living raises, whatever, in the 3 years or 4 years that you do a part-time law program. And if you can get that for free, then you're really going for, you're really not paying for law school because you're not paying for it in terms of lost income and you're not paying for it in terms of tuition dollars. I mean, you are paying for it in the form of misery, but that's the road you're going down. If you want to like successfully practice law, you've got to want to be in the miserable struggle.
And if it's not miserable for you, well, great. That's another good sign that you should keep going, right?
Sure. Yeah. If you love it, if you're one of those crazy people who's going to work in big law, which if you're going to make more than $100,000 out of law school, you're thinking about working in big law. So that's big law firms. Do you have any experience inside of big law firms? Do you know what hours they work? Do you know how crazy their schedule is? I don't know. I think if you gave up your job or if you paid any tuition, you'd be giving up a lot for an uncertain endeavor. Last paragraph.
I would find law school very intellectually fulfilling. Would you? But already having a solid job and a good career path laid out for myself in the market research space, I'm hesitant to fully commit to the law school path because of the income I'll forego as a student, coupled with the black and whiteness of the no law school unless you know you want to be a lawyer advice. My undergraduate GPA and practiced LSATs, plus the nature of my work experience, all paint a good picture regarding my potential. I'm more just looking for advice about whether law school makes sense for me. Thank you both for all you do, and sorry for the long-winded email.
It just doesn't sound like you know what you're getting yourself into. When you say, I would find law school very intellectually fulfilling, Ben goes, really? And I go, yeah, that's what I thought too.
Yeah.
I wasn't intellectually fulfilled at all. Like maybe one or two classes, but the vast majority of it I found so boring and so disconnected from anything that I thought I was ever going to do in my actual life. It was like studying spells in wizard school for spells that I definitely was never going to cast.
Or spells that even if you were going to go into that field, you're studying spells from the past. That no longer
that too. Yeah. An old spell that would have triggered the end of the world. And I know I'm not going to pull that trigger, but we're going to spend 8 weeks talking about it.
Yeah.
And it wasn't intellectually fulfilling. It wasn't the type of like morality puzzles that you think it's going to be. It's technical details.
Josh, one thing that Janaea talked about in that interview was informational interviews. I would suggest doing them with the kind of people you think you want to get a job as.
Very sensible, as always. Thank you, Ben.
Yeah. This next one's from Melissa, right?
Yeah, Melissa's a 40-year-old nurse. It says, hi, I just started listening to your podcast and I've been practicing with LSAT Demon. In an effort to make a long story short, I want to change careers and become a lawyer. Law was my original intention in my 20s, but life took another direction and I became a nurse. And suffice to say, I have not been happy at all. Law has always been in the back of my mind ever since 2009 when I put aside the LSAT prep book and decided to go to nursing school instead. My question is not, do you think I'm crazy or can I really do this? Because I know I can with 100% confidence. My question really is, how feasible do you think it is for someone so non-traditional like me to succeed in law school? I'd be going part-time. My grades from 10 plus years ago are average, not impressively stellar. And I'd be 45 once I finish, if I do. Thoughts, tips, advice, comments, pearls of wisdom, 3 question marks. Melissa really wants to know. What do you think, Ben?
I'm a little concerned by your claim that you're 100% confident. It makes me think you're not looking at this as objectively as you could be. Mm-hmm. I think for any decision, we might be very confident and confident enough to make that decision and feel good about it. But in the back of our minds, we know that there's a 5% chance, a 10% chance we could be wrong for various reasons. It seems like you're just looking at it from one side. It also reminds me of what Elaine said. It's like her job wasn't going well, so then she defaulted to law school. Why is that?
Yeah.
Well,
it's like someone is attacking me with a rubber band. They got a rubber band that they're about to shoot at me. So I'm just going to, without looking, jump out the window behind me.
Yeah.
It's like, well, there's this one bad thing. Let me not even consider the other thing, but just dive through it. Now, of course, Melissa is asking us for our advice, but yeah, I think you're about to dive through a 10th floor window here. I love it that you're saying you're going to go part-time. I assume you're going to keep your nursing job. My mom was a nurse. Nursing is super flexible. It is pretty damn well paid per hour. The flexibility of it is amazing. You can go anywhere. You can work any schedule you want. Nurses are super highly in demand. I understand that there's things about it that you hate, but unless you've been inside of law, I think you might be just jumping out of the frying pan into the fire here.
Yeah, it's wildly different too. I mean, I get it that you hate nursing, so maybe you would want something totally different, but you're going from a very hands-on, on-your-feet job, physical, right? Interactive, positive interactions in theory, because you're trying to help people, to isolated office work involving lots of paperwork and
mercenary,
long areas. Yeah.
Combative, you know, two sides each trying to make it as much of a hassle as possible for the other side. I guess that's litigation. But if you're not going into litigation, then what kind of law are you going into? Or what is it that you are actually going to do? And I do agree, Ben, this sounds to me like an Elaine kind of like, oh, what if I went to law school?
Yeah.
I'm 100% confident, Melissa, that you could go to law school. I know you could go to law school. I definitely know that you could graduate from law school. You know how I know that? Because they don't fail anybody. They admit people who have no business practicing law. I mean, even at pretty top schools, if you talk to the top students, they are disappointed in the caliber of their colleagues, many of their colleagues. I mean, it can be like the best school in your state. And if you're there, there's going to be a significant chunk of the people there who are like, whoa, no way. But you'll still graduate. They'll still take your 3 years of tuition or 4 years of tuition if you're going to go part time. They especially prey on people from out of state or out of country. They charge higher prices and have lower admission standards for those people. And, you know, the cream of the crop, the people who potentially have like lawyers in their family, or they've already worked in a law firm or as a licensed paralegal or some other thing, they come in with these natural advantages. And then you're going to have to do academic competition with them to see who's going to get those few lawyer jobs. Or you could like go be a nurse in Hawaii.
Or some other career. Like if nursing isn't for you, just think
else.
Of, yeah.
Besides lawyer.
Yeah.
The fact that it was your original intention, I don't know. Maybe that means something, but not really. You haven't, you know, why don't you go get a job in a law firm? I think with nursing career, you can probably like put it on pause. You might have to come back and do some recertification or something, but you could probably take a year off, take a
do
year sabbatical
a year.
From nursing and get a job as a legal secretary.
Yep.
See if you like the firm. Next one's from Olivia.
Ben and Nathan and Eric, ! I took the January 2024 test and have been pretty disappointed in myself after not finishing the games. I had to guess on the last four questions because I ran out of time and was unable to make solid worlds for a few of them. After listening to your show this morning, episode 438, I quite literally jumped up and down when I heard two others write in about their struggles with logic games on the January test. I wanted to see if you have received more emails about this. Logic games is where I can rack up some points, so I'm anticipating my official score from the January test to be much lower than my practice tests. Might it be the case, though, that logic games was hard for a lot of people, and then somehow our actual scores will not be as affected by the raw score of missing a few more in logic games? Jeez, we get this every time.
Yeah.
I've been holding back from emailing you guys about this until I get my score back because I know your answer will be to wait until I have my score and not speculate. I just got excited when I heard other people struggled the same way I did on the January test, so I figured I'd write in. Thanks so much for all your guidance.
Well, we love hearing from you, Olivia. So, it's not a bother. But you have no idea how well you did until you get your score back. The scoring scales do differ from test to test, but they don't really differ by very much. They differ by like one question, two questions, maybe. So we have no idea how hard the January test will be scored. I haven't heard other people complaining about those games. I think there were a couple emails that we read on episode 438. We've got your email here for 439. But I mean, I also, every single test, I hear people tell me, oh yeah, I smoked the games. Like, I know for sure that I scored perfect on the games.
I struggled with the games.
And every single test, I hear people say, those games were really hard. I just couldn't figure out. I mean, there were at least three of them that you couldn't make worlds on. And then, like, when the test actually gets released, it's like, well, yeah, there's a little wrinkle here. But, you know, you could make worlds this way that totally destroys it. Or, oh, this game does look hard, except for it's one of the easiest games ever. If you, like, once you unlock it in your mind, you realize, there's just nothing going on here.
There's no wrinkle. Yeah.
That's every single test. And Ben, you too, right? For 15 years of teaching the LSAT, we have exactly these same reactions to every single test.
Yeah. Yeah.
So could the scale be a little bit more generous? Sure. If it gives you hope to think about that, great. But I mean, you know, you didn't get every point on the games. You know that you could have gotten every point on the games because you do that on your practice tests. So you should be taking the test in February and April and June if necessary, and just eventually you will knock it out of the park. On one or more of those tests, you'll have perfect games, and then it'll be your reading comprehension and your logical reasoning performance that'll determine whether it's a 172 or a 175. You know, on this test, you didn't get your best score. You know you didn't get your best score because you didn't score perfectly on the games. So who cares if the scoring scale is a little bit more generous? It only hurts you if it is, because you're not going to even know if you decide to declare victory here, just stop. Then you're not going to even know. You're going to have no idea what you might have scored in February, April, June, if you would have gotten perfect games. So this is a case where Olivia, unless your score comes back an actual like 180 or 77, 78, 79, you know, something that's above Yale's 75th percentile. Unless it's that, I would always say retake here, because you know you can do better on the games. So even if it's the best score you've ever gotten, I still might say, yeah, but you didn't score perfect on the game. So keep trying it, because there's probably a couple, three more points in the tank, which could be worth $30,000 pretty easily. Thanks, Olivia. Cameron writes in, how to structure group/partner study sessions.
Hi, Ben and Nathan. I'm curious on what you all would suggest in maximizing a group study session with other Demon subscribers. Any tips on how to structure the sessions? Should we do drilling and then go over any we get wrong? Any tips help? Thanks, Cameron.
Go ahead. There's a lot of ways you could do this. Go ahead.
Yeah, the things that come to my mind first are either one, you do a time section on your own before you meet, and then you both start going over the questions that you missed. That gives you plenty of stuff to talk about.
That's
and presumably, you're going to get some of those questions wrong that your partner did not get wrong and understands, and vice versa. That said, sometimes people don't have time to do the time section beforehand and they just want to get together. And then, you can drill together. You can share the drilling link. You can start drilling and then give that question to your partner and they can do it at the same time. And then you can talk about it. I think it's a little less effective because there's more like pausing and starting as you're waiting for the other person to finish. But
if you're around the same level, if you're around the same pace, I think you could share your screen and each of you work. It's like when I do logical reasoning in my class, right? We drill LR in my classes all the time. And it's just, okay, here's a random question. I'm sharing my screen. Everybody comes up with their own answer. Only the host can actually click and see whether we're right. So we just leave it on that page until everybody has answered. You could do that with a Google poll if you had a bigger class or a bigger group of people. But if it's just you and a buddy, you just chat to each other. Okay, you got the answer. Okay. And then you both reveal your answer at the same time, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Then if they're different, maybe talk about it before you hit submit. See if you can figure out why the right answer is right and why the wrong answer is wrong. Hit submit, then you've got the written explanations, the video explanations. You can work on those. You know, you can look at it. Look at the written explanation together would be really efficient.
Yeah, you're talking about sharing screens like, you know, via Zoom or something like that. But they can also literally just start a drill, then click on the three-dot menu, and there's a share button.
Oh, so they just send that question to their partner.
Yeah,
and
they give them that exact
question in the Demon.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So disregard my whole thing about screen sharing.
I mean, you can do either one, right? Whatever's easier for you. But yeah.
And then you can talk about it.
Yeah.
And you can each look at the explanation and then you can kick that around and make sure you really feel it.
Yep.
Hell, if not, one of you could write an ask button question and let our team of tutors get back to you.
Yeah.
So long story short, do real LSAT questions. Be hesitant to click submit and go straight into the answer key and the explanations. You've got a study buddy. You guys should be able to reach consensus. Be sure that you like talk about it before you find out whether you're right. Because if you're both wrong, then that's going to tell you something too. Cool. Love the question. Thanks, Cameron.
Yeah.
Let us know if there's anything we can do to support you. We do have a Demon Discord. If you're an LSAT Demon subscriber, you can find our Discord and you can interact with each other there, hook up study partners, that sort of thing. Next one.
Yeah, this is from Diego. The subject is grade change question.
Hello, I'm a third year at UCLA and taking my first official LSAT in February. I'm averaging in the mid 170s with a high score of 179. I'm Latino and a student at UCLA applying to the Harvard JDP program. I have a 3.95 GPA, getting 1B my second year due to health issues and a TA strike at my campus, which disrupted the quarter. I want to challenge you, Diego, to pick one of those excuses, not both.
Yeah.
One excuse really, sounds great. Two excuses, I no longer believe you at all. It just, you got to be.
Yeah, even then, like a TA strike, that's going to somehow get you a B.
Say health issues, though. I got to buy that.
Okay.
Or just say you have a 3.95, and then I could infer, damn.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Or you could just say you're proud that you only got one B. That'd be even better. It'd be like a little humble instead of blaming it on something else.
Yeah.
I want to petition this. Oh, nice. Okay. I like this even better. Don't be humble. Get them to change it. I want to petition this, says Diego, and change it to a pass to improve my GPA. I talked to my counselor about this, but she told me that law schools, fucking hell, would view a pass as a C, which is worse for my GPA than the current B. I just don't think that's true.
Yeah, how does it treat it?
I think it just doesn't count towards your GPA. If they don't see a grade, how can they count it towards your GPA?
So it's nothing.
I think it's just nothing. I think that your grade, your LSAC GPA would go to a 4.0. We're still working on an LSAC GPA calculator. We have that in the pipeline.
We are, yeah.
But I think that this is a good move. Hmm. Anyway, don't take my word for it. Do some research and figure it out. Oh, here we go. Eric has done some research for us. Thank you, producer Eric.
Yeah, yeah.
The LSAC IGUGS, that's Interpretive Guide to Undergraduate Grading Systems, IGUGS, page for UCLA says that a P on a transcript is, quote, unconverted and, quote, excluded from both LSAC and school calculations. LSAC's page on transcript summarization also states that, quote, passing grades from systems of one or two passing grades, e.g. pass/fail, are generally excluded from GPA conversion. There are a few caveats to this practice, says Eric, but they don't seem to apply in Diego's case, and I agree with you. I think that your counselor, whoever this is that you're talking to, has no idea what they're talking about. Unfortunately.
Yeah.
I'm super happy, Diego, that you wrote us in. We are help@thinkinglsat.com. If you want to email us, you can go to our website, thinkinglsat.com, and you can give us tips, ask us questions. We want to help clarify. It's just shocking how much bad advice there is out there from people who think they're giving good advice. And, you know, I'm so fired up about this because I had a bad high school counselor. Have I told this story on the show before?
I feel like you have, but I don't
remember. Yeah, I suppose I can tell it again. I mean, I'm blaming someone else. I could have done the research myself, but I had a high school counselor tell me that I was good to go to apply undeclared to Cal Poly. I applied undeclared to Cal Poly. It was the only denial that I got on any of my college applications, Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, that is. And I got denied because you have to declare a major at Cal Poly. But it was my high school counselor who had specifically told me you're good to apply undeclared. This is the same counselor who told me not to apply to Stanford. Don't bother applying to Stanford because someone last year from our school had gone to Stanford.
Oh, geez.
And so it was like, you have no chance this year because, you know, they
we've met the quota.
they're just not going to admit somebody else. And so I'm a first generation college student. I went to a small town high school. You know, people are trying their best. Diego is a undergrad at UCLA. And boy, it seems like they should have better counseling here for pre-law counseling at UCLA. Maybe Diego's talking to some other counselor, like not the actual pre-law advising from UCLA. But no, the answer here seems pretty clear that you definitely want to get that changed to a pass if you can before you graduate.
Yeah.
And I think you'll be at a 4.0. Wow. What about Diego's last question? It says, is a 3.95 fine for my dream of going to Harvard? How would we answer that question?
Well, just see if that's above the 75th percentile.
Yeah, I would go to the scholarship estimator at lsatdemon.com because I know Harvard is right at the top of that list. lsatdemon.com/scholarships. Click on the Harvard 509, scroll down and look at their GPA, 50th percentile, 3.93. 75th percentile, 3.99. Think about what's happening here, Ben.
That's wild. You get rid of this 1B, and now you're going from above the 50th, which is good, to above the 75th.
Yeah, which is great. That's solidly now, you know, you're improving the GPA profile of Harvard Law School.
It's sad that the GPA numbers are so narrow and so tight.
Totally.
Because they're also so less precise.
Right. Shit like this, where you can just go. It's like, what if you could go in and can I look at my LSAT with the graders? Because I want to talk to them about something.
Yeah. Can I get a pass on questions 17 and 18?
Yeah. Just give me a pass there.
Just that, which effectively excludes it from the test.
Yeah.
I mean, it's wild. Yeah, it's really wild. It's sad because, you know, there's so much variation. School, major, it's extended over such a long period of time. It's no wonder that the schools give more weight to the LSAT, but they still give significant weight to the GPA.
They do. And nobody seems to be talking about this stuff. I'm kind of nervous. I feel like I'm peeking behind some curtains of some big time people who are going to like eventually just assassinate us. Because it's like, stop pulling back the curtain on this whole house of cards that we have built. Yeah. Sorry for the mixed metaphor, but you know what I mean? It's like, damn, because it's just billions of dollars and so people's lives, you know, their whole future at stake. And meanwhile, and it like really does benefit the people who have resources and connections and wherewithal, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
having lawyers in your family doesn't hurt. It definitely helps. They went to law school. You've got connections at the law school now. You had better primary school. You had better high school. You had better college opportunities. You had better counseling every step of the way. You had tutoring every step of the way. And, you know, until someone like Diego emails a random podcast, he's getting this. It's like he thinks it's the best advice he can get.
Yeah.
Except it's just exactly wrong. And it keeps him from upgrading his application to this, obviously, Masters of the Universe school, Harvard Law School.
Yeah.
Good luck, Diego. I hope you get that changed. And I hope you apply to Harvard with your 4.0 and write us back.
Yeah.
Hey, tips from a departing demon. We get these emails, right? When people unsubscribe for the demon and they sometimes as a parting shot, they offer a tip.
Okay.
And so I wanted to have you read this tip from Tara.
Okay. Tara says, practice so much, ! Also, listen to what the LSAT demon people say because they are very smart and good at what they do, ! I appreciate the endorsement, although it is not very specific.
Practice so much, ! I think is the takeaway there. I wanted to include that because Ben didn't read this, but it's all lowercase. People was PPL and because was BC.
Yeah.
It was just like this little text. It was just like she was texting us. But she was enthusiastic. She was happy about her time at the demon. And she was recommending that people just, use it a lot. Like,
so this is from the exit survey, right? The exit survey has a thing where it says, hey, what advice do you have to your fellow demon comrades?
Tips from a departing demon.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. So,
good luck, Tara. Let us know how it goes with your official test and your applications. Words of the week. We got two of them.
Okay.
Are either of these yours?
No, they're not. So the first one is sublime as a verb. Is this you? Did you provide this?
Both of these actually came from me. So sublime, I read on Defector. I read this dumb sports website called Defector. Sports, politics, news, culture, all sorts of cool stuff. I love it. It's like one of the only websites that I ever go look at. But the story was called There's So Much Ice on Mars, You Guys. And I was reading, it said, Mars today is an arid planet. Its temperature and atmospheric pressure inimical to the existence of liquid water. Suppose you could look up inimical as well.
Well,
inimical
means that's one of the words that we had before. I'm pretty sure.
Oh, we did.
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
So inimical means against, right?
Yeah, it's like harmful or obstructing or something like that. Yep.
Okay. So Mars, it's arid, which means dry.
Yep.
Its temperature and its atmospheric pressure are against the existence of liquid water.
Yep.
Colon. Warming ice would instantly sublime into vapor and vice versa.
Wow.
Then it goes on to say, but we know that water once flowed because the evidence is everywhere. It talks about all the water that's on Mars. Like it's all frozen, but there's water there on Mars.
Okay. Anyway,
have you ever seen sublime used as a verb before?
No. It sounds almost scientific. Would instantly sublime into vapor. So it skips from a solid to a gas. Is that what that means? Transition?
I think so. Yeah. In chemistry, sublime of a solid substance to sublime is to change directly into vapor when heated, typically forming a solid deposit again on cooling. An example, again, having to do with ice. It says the ice sublimed away, leaving the books dry and undamaged. Oh, interesting. So it's like, I guess, dry ice, right? Dry ice won't get... dry ice probably does sublime. If you've ever seen dry ice, I think you are watching sublimation.
Yep.
Right?
Because
it turns
it's
from
a solid
straight into a gas.
Yeah.
So if you had library books under it, they would not get wet.
Mm.
Presumably. I don't know. I don't fuck with...
Why is this on a sports website?
It's just sports, politics, culture, entertainment. It's everything. They mix in just random shit. So this one was about the existence of water on Mars. Anyway, check out Defector if you're looking for something good to read on the internet. The next one was also from me. Yeah, a scribe came up in my class. I can't remember why a scribe came up either. What's a scribe mean, Ben?
Well... I could be wrong, but when I hear a scribe, I hear like a tribute to, like if you ascribe something to somebody, you're attributing it to them. Is that the usage you had in mind or?
Absolutely. These poems are usually ascribed to Homer. So that would be, you know, sounds like we're not sure that Homer wrote them, but if we're ascribing them to Homer, then we are referring, the definition is to refer to a supposed cause, source, or author.
Hmm.
I suppose you could like ascribe a fart to one of your kids. If you've had an idea which one it was, you could ascribe it to him.
But you might not be totally sure.
Might not be the author. Never know.
Okay, good.
Thanks everybody for being here. You can be LSAT famous. Please ask us questions or share news with us at LSAT Demon. If you have questions about the LSAT Demon, email the best customer service team in the world, help@lsatdemon.com. Check out our other podcast, LSAT Demon Daily. Subscribe on YouTube or wherever you get your podcasts. Please, we're asking you for a favor. Just hit subscribe. It helps us. That was episode 439 of the Thinking LSAT podcast. Thanks all y'all for listening. Nice knowing you. Don't pay for law school.